Gotta intro the shit out of this. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Pear Pod, the newly award-nominated podcast. Thank you so much for the nomination. Makes total sense. Rising star. Got voted for rising star as well.
Oh.
Makes sense. They see the talent. Who wouldn't? And then best business podcast. Didn't get best comedy, which is, you know, we'll figure that out. I don't know who's judging this shit. Anyway, as you know, I'm a man of the people. I give the people what they want. And one of the recurring guests that I've, or guest requests that I've been getting, is to have Entrepreneur to the Stars. Oh, he likes that. Okay. Entrepreneur to the Stars. The man from whom I was sired, Michael Byers.
That's a true.
Rhymes like that. You like that? Yeah. So, Dad, first of all, welcome. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, it's the biggest opportunity you're ever going to have. So, you know, a lot of people watching. An entrepreneur who's dipped his toes in a wide variety of industries. Today, I'm hoping you can speak on some of the learnings you've made throughout that time. How's that sound?
That sounds good.
You've had more than one venture, some of which I've been alive for and remember, some I haven't. So I'll be interested to kind of delve all the way back up until where we are now, recording this podcast in the office of VM Digital.
Correct.
Beautiful.
Which was the 25th business card I had.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Now, though obviously, there was a bit of design in there, so there were a number of business cards for each business, but there were 25 different businesses I've been involved in.
If you want, I can ask questions. Traditionally, that's how it works before you just take off. There we go. Right, going all the way back, you were obviously a scholar at school, a natural learner, someone, you know, shooting for big things. When did you first realize you wanted to work for yourself?
Well, to be honest, I didn't. That wasn't how it started. I got fired from Quinsworth for stealing.
Bastards.
No,
they you didn't even do it.
I was a gambling teenager, yep. And I was robbing cash to feed my habit.
There it is.
And I got caught.
And I see. I was wondering, like, how deep was that going to go? Is he going to, you know, keep a professional? No, a dirty thief. Okay,
there we
beautiful.
Go.
That's how we start. Yeah,
not my proudest moment. So that happened. My granny was upset, and it didn't go down too well with the family. It's the first time I heard my father curse. Actually, he said, "You've really fucked up this time." As the head of Quinsworth had to call him to say, come and collect your son, he's a thief. Anyway, so that happened. So then it was really a case of, what am I going to do? And I knew that I wasn't really going to get a reference from Quinsworth. I'd only joined there because I wanted to be a sales merchandiser.
Yep.
And this was good experience. I couldn't get a job. Mm. It was 1982, after all. And so I signed up for an ANCO Start Your Own Business course. Mm-hmm. And I did that for a while, but I had no idea what I was going to do. And the man said to me, what's your business idea? And I said, I didn't know. And I just saw a van going by and I said, it's a van delivery business. And Rely on Deliveries was born. That was number one.
That's a beautiful, is that one of the things I remember very early about you is you always knew where we were in town. You'd be like, oh, there we go. We're down this street. You're always like, I mean, no, this street. And then you're just going up to you. You always knew those spots. Is that, that's from Rely on Deliveries.
Yeah, I had preceded that as a motorbike courier. I worked with Pageboy Couriers before that during the summers on my motorbike. So I got to know the city quite well then. I used to go out to Squib Linson and Swords all the time. I used to get the shittiest work because I was the junior.
Mm. I remember you telling me, like, basically, like, some of the areas that I live close to now where you're like, no go areas. You were like, you want to avoid those spots. I remember you telling me about, like, you don't want to be doing drops in Dolphins Barn and shit.
No. And Rialto, like, who'd fucking want to live down there?
A lot of people with dangly earrings, apparently. And myself.
Indeed. Those places are still much the same today, to be fair. So that was Rely on Deliveries, yeah. 1984, had a van, Nissan Air van, cost me £3,250 to buy, 41 JZO.
Beautiful vehicle.
It really wasn't. It was a heap of shite and gave me nothing but trouble. Mm-hmm. But So that was the first business I sold, actually. I sold it for £2,500 to Rufus Bailey-Gage.
What were you selling him? The van.
Basically.
Yeah, okay, nice. Yeah. Well, a van.
And you can keep the decals on the side.
And my body. So, you've a bit of cash in your pocket now from the van.
Yeah, at that stage, I'd ventured into print broking. So my mate Steve McCarthy had a print business, and when I was delivering stuff for people, they'd very often be starting something off, and they'd say, oh, geez, I'm setting up this new business, and oh, yeah, I need to get some business cards done. I go, well, I know a bloke. I go to Steve and say, I know a guy who wants to get some business cards done. He said, I'll sell them to you for 55. You sell them to him for 110.
I like
and
it.
And I went, okay, I'll have a bit of that action.
Big Steve.
Yeah, so print broking started, and then that ended up getting into design as well, and I was broking design too, and that's really where the, I suppose, the interest in the creative stuff started.
And can we go back to, let's talk like Bark. That would be my first memory of the jobs you had.
Yes.
Bark, not later. A dog grooming service, may have been more successful, but who knows. I remember we went into an office in Bark and you had Bark chewing gum. I remember that so vividly. Right. I remember we were playing like fucking Timon and Pumbaa or something on the computer. Mm-hmm. And you'd be like, you go off and fucking do shit. I mean, I think Fiona was there. Was Fiona there?
No, she hadn't come yet. There was a Claire, I think I had there at that stage.
There was a Claire.
It was a Claire, yeah. That was on 39 Dundrum Road. It's now an Argentinian cafe. I had it as a cafe as well, but that's another story.
Is that also Spill the Beans?
Yes, it is.
Spill the Beans. All right,
So Bark was a design agency. It had started its life as The Printed Word, which I thought was quite good at the time, my little nod to the irony of the Bible.
People are going to realize, king of branding over here. Mm. King of branding. But I remember, was there a period where you were, when Bark ended? Was there a stressful period in there? I remember there being a period either pre or just after Bark where I was like, oh, he's not doing Bark anymore.
Yeah, we took a break. I got into, that was agency, and it was about, we got up to about 11 people then, and we were doing a lot of work, and but we weren't making the margins. And then Garden Heaven came along. So Garden Heaven was a brand that a mate of mine had bought, and they did a show, like a gardening show. There's Bloom now, but it was Garden Heaven then. And there was a magazine as well. So he was going to do the show and I was going to do the magazine. I ended up publishing Garden Heaven for about 3 years. And I sold that and made a nice little turn on that, actually.
Heck it up.
And then Bark was reborn. And I sold it to Simon Ferguson for $3,500. There's another brand.
I haven't seen Simon in a while.
And then I ended up running that business, and that's where I met Fiona, actually, who's still with me today. So that was 2007. So we've been together now 17 years, incredibly.
Can we discuss, we'll go like more in depth to, you know, the specific businesses and stuff you've learned. But overall, like one of the big questions I want to talk about was like, now as a young entrepreneur myself, rising star.
Congratulations.
Meteor, just rocket to the sky. It's a stressful period. And doing this, but also having a family and that kind of stuff, I can imagine will be very stressful, and trying to balance all that would be stressful. And number one, did you experience that? And I would give you the compliment in saying you never really, as far as I can remember, unless I've repressed all these memories, I don't remember you typically bringing your stress from work home with you.
No, you get used to it. Leaving it at the door kind of thing, but it's always there. Like, you know yourself even now, like there's no way of escaping the day-to-day inroads into your brain of self-employment. It just doesn't go away. But yeah, I used to try and switch it off. You decide, well, I've done all I can for today. Mm. Now I'm going to go in. You've got to decide what kind of balance you want to have in your life. And if you're going to let that take over your life, then it's going to affect your family. But sure, there were other issues going on in the house at the time.
Whatever could you be speaking of? I remember probably the most stressful period, I think I was probably just old enough to remember, that was Spill the Beans.
Yep.
So do you want to tell the Spill the Beans story? Do you want to spill the beans on Spill the Beans?
Spill the Beans on Spill the Beans. I heard all those, you can imagine, when you come up with a brand. So Spill the Beans was Jane Pilkington, Paul Gaffney's fiancée, came up with that one. We had a little competition, everybody put their ones, and she went Spill the Beans, and that works. Mm. So what happened was, the Bark building that we were in, I'd bought that building, and then when I got into the Garden Heaven, a guy knocked on the door, and he said, how's it going? Are you letting this place? I went, what? He said, I'll give you $40,000 a year plus VAT. I want to put a cafe in here. And they were about to build Dundrum Business Park across the road. Mm. And I thought, I don't actually need this anymore. I'm going to go down, do my Garden Heaven stuff. So I'll take the $40,000 plus VAT. Mm. And he ran it for 3 years. And once the development across the road was complete, he had nobody to give breakfast rolls to anymore. Mm. So he fucked off, basically, and left me with a cafe, which I then had to rebrand.
Just Kenny?
No.
Kenny came later. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Kenny came in to run the cafe for me because I had no idea what I was doing. I did the kitchen for 3 weeks, making breakfast and
I remember that.
Soup.
I remember coming down the stairs and being like, hold on, I've only ever seen Dad doing like the head of the, running the show, and now suddenly he's down like, hey, who, do you want bacon in your rolls? Bacon in your rolls? And like sipping it up. And then I remember you were actually, I do remember you being like positive at the time and being like, listen, it's cool, you know, a different kind of vibe, you know, I get to be down here by myself, do the thing.
Yeah, there was a bit of that for a week or two. Then it becomes a chore. No, that wasn't for me. So I advertised to find somebody to run the cafe because I still had the building, I still had a mortgage on it, and my 40 grand a year plus VAT was gone. And Kenny applied, this guy called Kenny, who turned out to be a fraudster, and he basically ripped me off. He was doing reverse purchases through the till. He was ordering stuff on my account with the grocery supplier and then taking it. And he did me for about 15 grand, I think, until I eventually called him out.
I remember that time. I remember you that catching him. I remember you being like, I remember you telling me the story, and then I remember being like, I'm never going to find him. I don't know where he is. And then you found out like he's done this to other people.
Yeah.
Shit like that. Bastard.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Kenny.
Yeah, fuck you, Kenny.
Cunt. At any of these points, right? So do you think you ever had an ideal job you wanted to have? Like, you go into so many different industries and different roles and stuff like that. Like, it seems like selling is the job you do. But did you have, like, was there one position out of all those, design, garden, heaven, like whatever it is, that you were like, this is the best fit for me?
Yeah, I think they all sort of have a bit of creativity in them. So everything that I've done, really, it's sort of the design went on to the internet came along then, and then there was websites, and then there was photography, and then now there's video, and there's, you know, digital, et cetera, et cetera. But creativity was the kind of the piece that put it all together. But essentially, I'm a salesman. I'm not a creative. I don't actually design anything. I don't build websites. But now I enjoy the video stuff because I get to direct shoots, which I do do.
And
but yeah, so this is probably my favorite.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good to hear. Yeah. So not the old sod.
Well, that was funny. that was funny at the time. I was actually thinking about that actually today.
You know, that's like the lad's favorite story of Dad's ventures is the old sod and the concept. It gets talked about a lot. The lads would still know the name when we say it to them. Kev would be laughing at home if he's listening to this.
Yeah, it's 2007 and I was investing. We were all investing in 2007. Everybody was. Celtic Tiger was going nuts. And I had a stockbroker and everything, and I gave him $5,000. I thought it was very cool. I said, yeah, put that in some. And I was talking to him and I said, do you have any, I wanted to invest in some other business. And he said, do you have any clients who are doing anything? And he said, actually, I have this guy, Tim. I'll introduce you to Tim. And I met Tim, and Tim came in with his bag of gear. So he had this bag
of... Just specify what you mean by gear, just so everyone...
Sorry, yeah. It's like an A5 bag full of dirt.
Yeah, there you go.
And I said, what's going on there? And he said, it's Irish dirt, official Irish dirt it was called. And the company was the Old Sod Export Company. And he was flogging this to Americans initially as a funerary product. So you would sprinkle a bit of the old sod on the graves of dearly departed loved ones for a little bit of the old sod to bring the Irish home. That's the pitch.
Getting me emotional right now.
And I said, Jesus. I said, oh, well, we're going to sell it to mom and pop stores. We're going to sell it in funeraries. And we're doing that at the moment. And it's going to go huge. I went, okay, I bought it.
It's going to be huge.
I bought into it.
I'm sold.
I gave him 50 large.
Oh, cheddar, what are you doing, man?
I did. Yeah, like, just like that. I actually wrote him a check at that day, I think.
I was 50.
And then he sort of said, well, actually, I need someone to drive the sales of this. So I thought, well, I'm your guy.
It's your lucky day, sir.
And then I went and we started flogging dirt. And then we got a gig with QVC, the shopping channel.
I know that, yeah.
Came over to showcase event in the RDS they have every year. And we were there with a little stand and they came over and they said, I'm into it. And we had another product that went with a Balik bowl and some shamrock seeds and it went in a gift box. It was $49. And this was like a little perfect little gift for somebody's birthday or Christmas or something like that. Or indeed Patrick's Day. Mm. So they said to me, well, look, we'll take 2,000 of the gift boxes. No shit. And we'll put you on QVC on Paddy's Day in the States. You know, have you got someone who can speak about it? And we had this guy called Pat Burke and he was big redhead.
Fuck, I thought you were going to say you went on QVC. I was like,
no, I was there. I wasn't on, but I was there. We sold the 2,000 boxes in 6 minutes.
Holy shit.
And they ring me while we're still live on air and go, I need some more of these boxes. So I'm ringing the dude in Balik and going, I'm going to need another couple of thousand bowls.
And he's getting into his digger and like literally going in. And
that was the easy part, is the dirt. Yeah. It's all the other bits.
Weirdly enough, loads of dirt around here.
The Balik bowls were handmade. He said, I can't make you 2,000. I need to have them over in a month. I said, I can't make them in a month. It'll take me 2 months. I'll just fucking do them in a month. So we sold 4,000 boxes in QVC at $49 each. Fuck. In 8 minutes. Yeah, that was a good start. And then the crash came. And all the little mom and pop stores and all the funerary things, they all shut down and nobody wanted our dirt.
And so when that happens,
success.
See, like, this is the thing, and like, this is the important thing that I think you can kind of speak on, is like, you have lots of things. Like, for me right now, I don't think Pear Creative will, I can't see myself doing anything else except Pear Creative. It's something I built on, something I enjoy. What'd you say?
You will.
It's hard to get off like a winning lotto ticket, you know? Well, the podcast will obviously leapfrog Pear Creative. But like dealing with like, what's the word? Dealing with, yeah, like loss, or like being like, I need to go start again. You start again a lot.
I'm good at that.
That's fucking cool. Like, I don't know if I have that. Like, I haven't had to do it right now, but like being good at being like, all right, dust yourself off. Here we go again. Let's jump back in at the start.
Got to be good at failing. I encourage people to fail. If you fail, you're trying. And if you're trying and you're putting yourself out of your comfort zone, you're trying to achieve something. So failing is good. That's how we learn. If you don't fail, then you're not trying. So, you fail a lot, man. You know, more times than succeeded. You know, as I said, you look at those 25 businesses. I sold two of them. It's not a great record, really, considering you set up business to sell it. That's why you do it, really. But I've enjoyed the gig. It was me. It wasn't just about always making money. I was able to do what I wanted to do and I didn't have to answer to anybody else. Mm. I worked for about 3 years for other people and it just didn't work out well. I wasn't very good at taking instruction.
And that's like, I would say you do like to own your day and you like to be like, the work will get done, but like, I'll do some work in the car. I'll jet off over here, jet off over there. I couldn't see you being like, Michael, it's 8. Where the fuck have you been? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's 8:01. You clock in at 8.
Yeah.
Can I help you? What kind of like, do you know what I mean? Working for a boss, working in like a management somewhere, like I've never seen you do anything but be the boss, actually. I don't think.
No, I've never done anything but be the boss, really, since that little period, and that was in the early late 90s.
Was that when something ended, which one was the one that hit you the hardest and you were like, fuck, it's going to be really hard to pick this up again?
Stickball.
That's so fucking funny. It's the next thing on my list. So just to give everyone a bit of an intro, the tennis ball, you get a little mitt. It's got Velcro on the front of it, a little circular thing. You throw it at the hand and you catch it. Everyone's played it. You've had played at your granny's house, whatever it is. My father claims he brought that to the country.
I would stand up and bow if I wasn't sitting in a seat. I did, actually. Well, I didn't. Conrad Jones did. He saw it when he was in America and he said, that's a fucking Michael Byers product, that.
What year is this?
That's 1991. The year I met your mother. And stickball. So Conrad comes along and he comes around to my apartment and he goes, here, take this. And he hands me one of the mitts and he has the other one in his hand. And he goes, he peels the ball off the mitt and he just tosses it. And I just, ksh. I went, oh, yeah.
It's a great game.
I stood there.
No one's denying the quality of the game. Like,
yeah, and it was a really good thing to demo. And so here we are. It was September. And I'm going, what are you thinking? And he said, I think you should do something with this. I think this could be a stocking filler for Christmas. Be a good one for that. It was $9.99. It would be a good little price for it. We were buying it for about...
There's a brand called Stickball at this point. Correct. And you were looking to...
So it was in a bag and it had the thing. Yeah, I then get on the phone and I find this guy called Luke, spelled L-U-K.
Fuck that.
And he was in America working for Stickball. I got a hold of them. This is all pre-websites. It's this one. Mm-hmm. And I said, listen, are you looking for an agent in Ireland? And he said, where's Ireland? Jesus, dude. Okay.
I have a mother from
the problem was, he said to me, they came in cases of 40. And I said, okay, well, I'll take a case and we'll go out and we'll try and sell them. And myself and Conrad got into the car and we drove around the country to every sports shop because we weren't going to get into Toy Master. There was no Smiths at the time. Where is this fit? We said sports shops is where it has to go.
Yeah, like beach shops. Not correct, a ton of those.
Don't have beach shops, really. Yeah, you know, not in September anyway.
Fair.
So we did. We drove around the country and took orders. We had a van. We hired a van and we No, we'd done a little bit. No, we didn't. We bought a we bought 1,000 of them, 25 cases. Is that right? Yeah. And we flogged them all on that trip. We were actually, well, I have them here in the thing. Take 40. Yeah, okay. And it was a nice little price for them. It was 150 quid or something. And there was a nice little turn in for them. We were selling,
150 quid?
550, I think we were selling them for.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And he was selling them for a tenner. Mm. So it was all right. You were making a few quid, but it wasn't great. Making a couple of quid a unit.
But what makes that so devastating then? You just thought that was the moon?
No.
You thought you were off the races?
We then realised we need to, the only way we're going to make money out of this is sell them direct. So we started, we put out kids in shopping centres and we were selling them for a tenner. Now it was fun and we were getting cash. Mm. And that became the deposit for a house. Fuck. So when that ended, because there was no next year really, there was no craze again. It went very well. Like, we were on TV and everything. We sold a lot of them.
Oh, man, I'm going to hunt that fucking news clip down, because I for the longest time I thought you didn't. That was just like something you said, that you brought Stickwell to Ireland.
Oh,
like,
no. That's the thing. I mean, yeah, we were on. It was some kids' program or something that was on at the time. I'll dig it up.
The Den, like,
yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
It was a little RT2 thing, and we got onto that, and people playing it, and everyone went mad for it.
It's fucking fun.
Yeah. So we got it onto the Late Show, but he didn't demo it. We had it was there. I could see it in the corner.
You got to fucking throw it to him or something, yeah. Like.
So we sold, I think 25,000 of them.
Jesus Christ!
So that was a hit all in one period of time.
And then at what point do you like? Okay, this is done now.
By the following summer. Like, there was still an order for them and they were taking them to stores, but the idea of selling lots of them wasn't really going to happen. So you got to bail. Can't just sustain the business.
Do you look back at that now and be like, did it take off further? I still feel like I see them around. Or did the craze kind of end?
They came under loads
of different names. Is that why there were so many in the house all the time?
Yeah, like, they were so shit as well. They were so badly made. Like, the Velcro kept coming away from the glue and people, we got more returns than you knew what to deal with. It wasn't great. You need to be in control of that, doing your own manufacturing, and you're just an agent. It's not so good.
Drop shipping.
That was good. That was good. We made some nice cash money. Not much cash money around anymore.
No one's fucking doing cash anymore, man. When you were at a, like, when you're taking risk, how do you approach, like, in general, how do you approach risk? Because, like, there's obviously people that are, like, one of the big complaints of people is they're too worried to even start something. So, like, how do you balance out, like, you talked about the Celtic Tiger there and about, like, big risks and, like, smaller risks. How has your kind of interpretation of risk kind of grown over the last, like, let's say your entrepreneurial career? Did you find as you got older, you were like, I have to be more careful about the risks I take or more calculated? Or do you feel like as you get older, you feel like you're wiser to what's a good opportunity and you can still jump at it?
Yeah, I like to just dive in. You know, I like starting something new. I get excited, you know, something comes along. Like videos, but we generally just sort of found our way into it. It's a bit like, you know, we're doing do a lot of property marketing at the moment, and that was something we decided we want to get in there. We want to do commercial property marketing. There's regular work there. We get brochures, we get websites, we get video work. But we didn't really know anything about it, so we just got one,
yeah,
and then just did it, and then learned from it.
How much of your, like, of as you've worked in now, how much do you think of the success of the business is like, or the success of your business has been you and just being able to, like, be approachable with people? People like you, they like to, like, work with you, very professional, but, like, it seems like the kind of the constant in that is you. So do you feel like you have a good ability when you get in a room with someone, you can sell them what you're trying to sell them and they'll be able to receive that?
Yeah, I'm okay at that bit. I'm okay at the, here's somebody who has some sort of an interest in what I'm selling, taking that from there to an order. I'm not very good after that. So the client services bit, operations, production, team management, that's all Fiona. Because I realized, I identified early on, I didn't have the patience for it. So you've got to stick to what you know and know what you're not good at and find someone who's better at it than you are.
Did you... like, if you were looking back now at your life, is there any other industries or work or completely different from entrepreneurship that you ever look at and be like, I would have been a great insert?
Whatever. Yeah, I always thought hospitality, actually. Initially, I mean, when I did spill, I mean, I still look at cafes and go, oh, it's nice.
You have the shirts for it, like.
Yeah, fair. The one I wanted to open up a little sort of a speakeasy club.
You should still do that, man. The jazz bar thing. There's something, I know it's expensive as fuck right now, you wouldn't even be able to do it, but you did always have this idea of like, I want a really nice, like, individual candle lit, like two people tables.
Lots of red velvet.
Yeah, jazz and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, spotlights on attractive ladies sitting, singing.
Yeah.
And people eating dinner.
It would probably be, yeah, we've got a, like, I feel like speakeasies are obviously a big thing now. Like, there's loads in Dublin, they do very well. So, like, the concept is there, but the live music aspect, or, like, the big band aspect would be so nice. And, like, a real day, like, evening
there's
out.
There's nowhere like that.
Nope. Still none. And it's...
We'll do it together, will we?
I don't know if I could do hospitality, man. I don't know. Like, I suppose I wouldn't be working, like, the even in Fat Face, just dealing the retail. Like, I could never see you work. I don't think you'd last 5 minutes.
Did retail when I was in school. Smart Brothers, hated it.
I don't think I could ever see
you. With knackers every day. I couldn't handle it.
Yeah, I can see that. Let's move forward slightly. There's a few jobs you've had that I've been like, that's a winner at the start of it. I've been like, the concept is perfect. I can't see how this will fail. And Tap That Loyalty would be one of those.
Oh, Tap That, yeah.
I give people a quick intro. Everyone has them now. I use one now. It's a, like when you go to buy a coffee or whatever like that, your loyalty card was on your app. And like this was when apps were early enough. And it was like kind of the transition between the stamp card and like into apps. And I'd say you were probably 5 years too early. I just don't feel like everyone was as comfortable with just doing everything through their phone. Like the Apple Pay stuff wasn't as big a thing. I think you were just a touch early. People were like, I have my iPod app, but I don't have like apps like that. I feel like you were just a touch too early.
There was a bit of that. And the technology wasn't right. So it was using, we were using Bluetooth beacons. So the ones you have at the moment use QR codes of various types still. And we were using beacons, which were ahead of time, and it literally just emitted a signal and sent the phone to somewhere. When you read your phone over this or read the app over this, it would just send you to somewhere. And in this case, it was giving you a stamp. It was very cool, the whole thing. But you're right, it was just a little early. So we got it into 50 cafes/restaurants, maybe, we're trying it. But some phones work better than others. The Apple worked very well, but some of the Android phones didn't work so well. And then people got pissed off, and then the customer got pissed off because their customers were getting pissed off. And this isn't worth the hassle. So we thought we'd come back to that. But funny enough, that as a concept, still nobody's using the beacons. Very cool, but...
Like I use I can't remember what one I have now, but I like the system does work quite well and like it does make sense to have.
Is that just for one coffee shop or is it a generic one?
Container outside.
Oh, here?
Yeah.
Oh, do they have one? Yeah.
They have Squid.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You tap it onto a little beacon thing that you had and it goes great. Like purchase, stamp done, and then you pay them.
I don't use that. That's sloppy, isn't it?
You should do it. It's handy. Just because I was always missing out in fucking coffees because I kept losing the cards. Can we discuss what you would consider some of your biggest mistakes in business? And if there is any you look back on, like, and I use mistakes gently because in order to learn and to improve, you need to make mistakes. But is there anything you look back on and being like, that was a mistake or that was an error? I wish I'd whatever thought that much through. Or do you look at all of them as that's what got me to here?
Yes. They're all part of the story and they're all part of the journey. Most of the mistakes that I made were investments. I invested in a mezzanine scheme in 2007 and we put £500,000 into something. And we put another £500,000 into two other things, having taken a mortgage out in the house to do that, which was very sloppy. So £1,000,000 we played with. And we lost most of it. A lot of other people did too, but you know, that hurt.
There's a moment, and like I don't think we grew up poor. We obviously didn't. We were very lucky, and like you provided very nice life for us and mum to an extent. Thank you, mum. But there was, and this is, I don't even know if I've talked about this, but there was a day that I was going somewhere in school. You would drop me to school, and I think I was going to like a hockey thing. There was like a match on. And I wanted to go, but it was like a certain amount for the bus. And I was like, "Dad, can I have £20? I need to pay for the bus up to Belfast or something." And you were like, "I don't have it." And I was like, "That's all right. You can send it into my like account or whatever you need to." And you're like, "I don't have it, so you'll have to just, I don't know, figure it out." And I remember you drove off, and I was like, "Fuck! Like how fucking?" I think up to that point, I'd be like, "Oh no, we're flaked." And then I started to be like, "Oh no, it's like just to get us in through Wesley is a struggle right now." And obviously went to Wesley.
Yeah, that was tough. And I think when your mum and I separated, that was particularly tough because there was a lot of money going out, not just to keep that household going, but now I was having to pay for somewhere to live as well. We were under a lot of pressure there and the school fees and fuck. I worked it out there. I was talking to somebody else about school fees. I think we spent 127,000 on you and Max's education.
Sorry, how is that the case? Like,
well, two of the sums yourself.
I thought Wesley,
it's like was 12 grand a year, I think, for the 2 of you. And then it went up maybe to 14 or something at one point.
In Wesley?
Yeah.
My kids aren't going to Wesley. Fuck yous. Jesus Christ.
And then college and then all the bits that go with it. So, I mean, the school fees is one thing. Then, I want to go and do this trip and I want to go here and I need uniforms and I need school lunches and all the other shit that adds on. So the 14 becomes 20. That's net. So that's 40 you're earning just to pay the school fees.
I remember you were adamant not to pull us out of Wesley.
No, absolutely.
Even though there was like, I remember there was that period where I was like, I think I said to Mum, I was like, I'll go to Benilde's. I've met like
and
some.
Actually, it was such bullshit, really, because I think my dad had done that and he really struggled. Now he never really had much, but they put us through school. They put us through Wesley as well. I think that probably just followed and said I'd have to do that. I'm glad I did. I think Wesley was a good school. I think you've got some good friends out of it. I think it gives you a good start.
If
a lot to be said for it.
Me and Myrne talk about like kids where we want to bring kids to school and stuff. We talk about Wesley and like I know lads who went to BCS, Benilde's and did far better in their leaving certs than me. Are also very successful, very smart guys, all that kind of stuff. But I think what I paid for or what I received from Wesley outside of the academic stuff was like opportunity to do the extracurriculars. So like the drama stuff. We even had like broadcasting stuff that we could do, like putting on live shows. They had lots of
arts.
Yeah, and like obviously the facilities are beautiful and all that shit, but like and obviously now my best friends are all Wesley people. I've been the best man at one of the lads' weddings. They'll all be best men of mine. They'll all be at my wedding. Like my whole life is basically Wesley and like the kind of bits that have come out from that. So it obviously had a huge impact, but at the time I didn't even realize it was like that tight. Mad.
Yeah, and it's good. It's not about the results anyway. It's all about the experience, isn't it? And friends you make and the things you learn. And
Made me who I am. Like,
yeah, sure.
And in other schools, they might not talk like I think.
Similar in Andrews. Lola's in Andrews. That's Sam's sister, stepsister, my daughter. And she's in Andrews now. And she loves it there. And they're very similar in terms of their arts focus and everything. And she does all that. She loves it.
Oh, yeah.
You pay handsomely for that shit too.
It's one of those ones, like, that'll be something we'll have to address because I've, like, I look at even BCS now. BCS is Bounty Community School, around the corner from me. And they just got a nice big grant, the lovely new 5G Astro and all. I was like, it looks great, but it's all the other shit, I guess, you're paying for. But, like, the level of education, like, one of the lads, Craig Argan, I used to be good friends with, he went there, fucking got, like, 500 points in his leaving cert. Like, guys, we're all doing the same tests, you know what I mean? The quality of the education is there. Mm-hmm. I actually think the Wesley's academic scores aren't great.
No.
I think they're actually quite poor.
Do they produce a better, more rounded person?
Yeah.
If there's values in there as well, do you know? And
yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And and we got to go to school.
But like you went to Columbkills for your primary.
Columbkills, yeah.
Got to play a bit of Ga.
Yeah, got to.
Before the Protestants kicked that out of you.
Yeah, I remember I went to Crow Park.
Yeah, it's deadly. I'd love to have played that.
Yeah, now in fairness, there was 42 people in my class. It was a bit of a fucking free for all.
1,000 people in that school, actually.
I know, it was the largest national school in Europe.
Yeah,
a lot of kids, and in that one little square yard, it was just fucking. It was like,
and the priest let you make your communion. Do you remember?
Yeah, the priest let me do a few things.
Ooh,
there we go. Now we won't go there.
Very quiet.
No, keep it in the corners of the mind.
You can go there if you want.
No. Please, what are they called, priest? What do you even say? What's your father? Oh, father. So when you have how would you say now, as you now have seen me and Max both were in our work lives and obviously excelling on that, was there ever any worry for either of us? You can talk about this as individuals. Was there ever any worry that like, what if this Sam guy might be a fucking loser? I don't think he has any work ethic. I don't think I want to be raising him for the rest of my life, do you know?
The only time I was worried about you is when you went to Carl Brewer Street to study fucking event management or some shit.
Yeah, it was event management.
What were you doing ticking that?
I didn't get any points.
Exactly, but you can't tick anything that you don't want to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's where you ended up. Was a BBS in fucking event management or something?
It was DIT, Carl Brewer Street, event management, and I got to Christmas.
I think you told your mother about it before you told me, but you were gone in 2 months, really, weren't you? We spent a month trying to get out of it.
Yeah, no, I should have left in the first month and then I didn't.
Yeah.
And you can go straight back into college if you do that. But I was like, I need to stick it out and know for sure I don't want to do it. So I went to Christmas.
Yeah.
I actually got fucking like 4 A's and a B in my exams and then quit and had to work in Massimaducci for a year to get back
well,
to
that. Well, that was the deal. We said, well, look, if you're going to do this, so you'd worked out then that you would probably be able to get into to do, what was it called?
So I went in Wesley. In Wesley. I didn't even hear about Tala as a college. Right. I didn't even know it was there. They told me about DIT. they told me, but the only broadcasting course is broadcasting and media and DIT, which is radio. And that was the only thing I could go 460. I remember the points I needed. Got 360. And then I was like, I went in, I had a fucking breakdown one day in college and I was like, I'm going to have to quit this shit. And I went on to the CAO thing. I just started looking up things I wanted to do. And then creative and digital media, IT Tala. And I was like, fuck man. And I went through things and it was like, are you good in front of camera? Do you want to be a presenter? Do you want to learn how studios work and all this shit? And I was like, this is all exactly. Totally. And I said this to my fucking, that old bitch, the guidance counselor. I said, that's what I wanted to do. I was like, is there any media courses? I'd heard of like Maynooth do some stuff. She's like, really? We like to focus on the big three if we can. And I was like, you fat whore. Like you led me down the wrong path. But
actually, that was poor advice.
But I remember I went to, they let me come in. You were like, you should email the lecturer and see if you can come in and sit on a class. And I did. And I sat in on their TV studio practice day. And I was like, this is fucking unbelievable. And there was a few fucking nice moths in the room. I was like, what are you doing here? And then they were like, who's this loser who wants to like come in, sit on a class?
To be
like, I got, it was like lambs to the slaughter at the start. Then I actually started, made it work for me a little bit.
You were all over that from the word go, mate.
Yeah. And
you were writing shit. Like you wrote at least three shorts. Mm. We made two of them. Mm. I was in two of them.
You starred in both.
Yeah, exactly. How's your career going? Yeah, there's another thing I'd like to have done, but I knew I was never going to be a Brad Pitt.
Well, fucking short. That's still, there's awards. Their dad played a psychopath. What's the word? Therapist, I guess. Yeah,
he was a therapist. Yeah, he was a marriage guidance counselor. Actually,
we spent our whole budget of our €75 on one breakaway plate that you had to smash over some poor woman's head in the kitchen.
Did well too.
She took it like a champion.
Yeah, she did.
I might intro. I might
like a ton of bricks, didn't she?
Yeah, onto the tiles. Yeah.
Yeah, hilarious.
Yeah, and then you had to do that thing. Maybe you had to do that scene where you had to like get over her in bed.
Yeah,
you were weirdly good in that. You were too comfortable.
Yeah, I liked playing the nutbag. Yeah,
you licked her face.
A little bit of that in me. I licked my hand. It was the blood.
Yeah. A dark mind. That's all you can do in shorts because you can't. You don't have the budget to do anything.
That was the first time I ever realized you could put a camera in a fridge.
Yeah. One of the very like low budget things to do. What if we put it in the fridge?
Open the fridge and let's hope it won't fog up.
Yeah. No, we've got a. That was great. That was one of my favorite.
So that worried me for a while. Mum and I were both worried because we didn't know. It was that time before you got into Tala. Once you got into Tala, you've been flying since then.
And then versus that, right? You look at Max. There was definitely a period where I was like, I think it was the burger place he worked at. I was like, this chap is a fucking animal. And he just, from that point on, he would just be like, no, I've got
burger
work.
Place did he work at?
Gourmet Burger in Dundrum. Oh, yeah. I remember
it was the counter. Yeah.
And
he was all over that, wasn't he? Loved running the pass.
And he was making money. Then from that, I think he got a taste for, if I work well, I make more money. And from that, he hasn't kind of stopped. Like,
I remember he sat down and he said, how am I going to sort out my leaving cert? He was in fifth year and he was getting towards the end of fifth year. He wasn't really on top of his study and all that. And he didn't really want to do it. And I said, you need a goal, Max. You need a goal. You know, what do you think you can get? How are you going to get it? And then you need a plan as to how you're going to study all this shit. You've got to decide, I've got 28 subjects to cover, and each one is going to take me an hour. That's 28 hours. You've got to block the whole thing down for every subject and do yourself a calendar for the next 6 months and then work the calendar. Mm-hmm. And he did. Mm-hmm. And it worked. And he got into goal setting, and he got into setting goals for himself and writing plans, and he's all over that shit now. And that's a huge part of it.
Like, do you have, there's definitely a pride aspect for you of like, you don't want to be the dad whose fucking kids are like, oh no, he's living on the street. We lost him.
A lot of my mates are very jealous of me and how well my boys do and the relationship that we have. And they're very jealous of it. And I understand why.
Here it is. It's not all financial. Do you know what I mean? Like,
certainly not.
Look at my skin. Something to value. As you kind of reflect on your core family and also your business life, what kind of values, like your core values, do you think kind of uphold throughout your life that you've kind of stayed true to?
We did a session with VM about 2.5 years ago, and we started talking about values of the business. And of course, you find your own values come through in that. And the values of the business, I think, are very similar to my own. And they are bold, creative, and proud, with fun at its core. They're our values. And they're the kind of things that I live by. And if you're proud all the time, then that means you've got to put an effort in. And I care about what other people think, so you're always trying to do your best.
Do you have like, obviously we're talking about this now, you didn't plan on having or when me and Max were whatever 10 or whatever, you hadn't planned on having Lola at this point.
Mm.
Did you? How would you envisioned? Let's say just post mum. Yeah. How would you envision the end of your life looking like?
I'm not quite sure what you mean.
So like before, let's just say just as you'd met Lucy.
Yeah.
Like okay, well, even before Lucy, you've broken up with mum.
Yeah.
Were you like, I'm definitely gonna get married again and all stuff? Were you like, I might just be a bachelor? Like
that? No, I didn't. I said I'm not suited to this. Obviously.
Mm.
You have to be very patient to be a good partner. And I felt that I was maybe a little bit selfish. So I'd never any intention, even when I met Lucy and when I started dating, no intention of marrying. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Certainly no intention of having any more children.
Thanks.
And Lucy was, she wasn't into having kids anyway. So I was all fine. And then.
Just shows women are fucking liars.
Indeed. Just they don't know themselves.
Do you think, this is one thing me and Max talk about a lot, you've spoken about retirement before, but I actually don't know what you'd do if you were like, all right, you have, let's just say, no financial stresses. You can live for the rest of your life on what you have saved. I don't know what you'd do. Like, I think you'd do it for a week and then be like, wait, it's Monday. What do I do on a Monday? I guess nothing. I'll just go down and watch TV. Like, I think you could do it for
a week.
Yeah. I genuinely think a week. You can't even go on holidays. Like, so I don't know how retirement, I'm in the same boat. I don't know what I'd do unless I just go at golf. But like, well, I don't know what, like, I feel like I need some sort of structure to my week or something to be pursuing. Otherwise it's, you know, like what's, you just kind of get to just live out the last 20 years and die basically.
It depends who you are. I think if you're a civil servant and you've gone through the system there and you're coming out with a nice pension at 55 and, you know, everything's all rosy in the garden and you've got enough, then you're looking forward to switching off and then just doing nothing. But any of the people I see in the golf club who are at that stage, guys my age who are retired, some of them, I think they're bored. Yep. I think they're bored. And I think I'll always be involved in something. Even if it's not running the business, I think I'll have an interest in things if I can. Because I'd go mad, like, if I was stuck at home all the time.
I don't know. Like, I think it was so interesting to see that period for, like, the first, like, I think I'd be texting Lisa being like, how's he doing? Ooh. He's like, oh, I don't know. He's
not sure to be the best side of me.
No, I think you'd spend a lot. It'd be a lot of, I suppose you'd lie in for a while and you'd be like, that's great.
You can't lie in anymore. As you get older, you can't lie in.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It's one of those. So like what, it might just be till you drop kind of thing.
I'd say so, yeah.
I like
or
that.
Until somebody says, fuck off.
Mm.
Well, get out of here. We don't need you anymore, old man.
Get out of here. Where are your trousers?
Yeah.
If we have a lot of obviously young heads watching this, all different industries, or some are starting their entrepreneurship journey, some of are in it right now. If you could give one piece of advice that kind of encapsulates your whole business journey. It doesn't necessarily have to be about how to get the most financial gain, but even how to enjoy the journey as much as possible. What kind of things would stick out to you?
I think if somebody, I have one thing that I use all the time, and I used to do it, and then I started doing it, and I've never looked back since, and that's trust your gut. So if something doesn't feel right, then go with that. For whatever reason, you may not know why it doesn't feel right, whether it be a job you're looking to do, or a client you're looking to work with, or a piece of business you're thinking of doing, or investment you're thinking to make, trust your gut. And once I started to do that, I found that, first of all, I didn't worry as much because you knew you'd made the right decisions. So you can start that at any age. That isn't just about business. You know, anytime you're about to do something, if something feels, this doesn't feel right, then don't fucking do it, do you know? And that's been the great, I'd say 20 years ago, maybe I got that one. And since then, I'm not sure I've made, no, maybe it's not 20 years, probably around at that time we made that investment. And I knew in my heart of hearts when I was making that investment, I was fucking taking a chance. That's a big mistake, that one. So trust your gut.
And just finally, something that came up that one of the lads actually asked me to ask you about. Can you speak a little bit about the power of affirmations and why you chose, like, it's a big part. I obviously in your office, like, you have a A4 printed out. I think it changes yearly, but it's printed out of like a set of statements that you say to, whatever, get yourself in the right mode, get yourself in the right mindset, etc. But number one, when did that start, and how has it been a positive for you?
I've done a bit of coaching over the years, not giving, taking, and LMI was the first one that I did, and they had all sorts of these things, and we did affirmations of success is the progressive realization of worthwhile predetermined personal goals. That was there. Thing, and that was the first time I realized that success isn't about getting to somewhere or getting the ice cream or getting the goal or getting the sale in or whatever, reaching the profits. It's about the doing. It's the process. And that's what that one taught me. And they used to talk about visualizations as well as affirmations. I started writing affirmations down then. Max is very good in his affirmations too. So I write them down, but they come from your goals. They have to come from your goals. You can't just say, oh, drink a liter of water a day. You know, you've got to believe what you're doing is going to help you. I read them every morning, open it up, and they go, there they are again. Yeah. Not sure how successful I'm being on them, but you've got to be very diligent with that kind of thing. Affirmations are good.
Well,
positive
ladies.
Statements of fact.
Indeed. And interestingly enough, like, I think if you look at me and Max, sorry, this last thing we'll say, I think we both got, like, I think the business side and the drive is definitely, like, very visible in Max. But I think, like, obviously you did that short, like, there's a theater side or a creative side of you as well that, like, maybe doesn't get seen as much. But do you feel like when you did, like, the amateur dramatic show and it, like, do you still, is there a yearning for, like, that kind of, I don't even want to say, but, like, I do remember, like, we'd be on family holidays and you'd go and, like, sing or, like, they'd, like, maybe got put in a cage
performer,
once.
Performer, Pisces.
That's what I mean. So that is, there is that in you as well. Do you feel like you get to, like, itch that scratch?
I don't think I have probably set myself a big enough goal in that department ever. Mm. I have sung in front of people. I have done plays. I've done musicals. I even did extras. I was in Love, Hate. So I've never really pushed myself and said, come on, get yourself a role in a big movie that you get paid 50 grand for. Mm. I haven't really gone that far. So I think I thought it was a non-businessy thing. Mm. I joined a choir, joined the school choir there recently. So I'm hopefully going to get a chance to sing with Lola. But that, I love that. Mm. An hour and a half every Tuesday we're singing. And we're not singing fucking church shit, obviously. But yeah.
Church
I
shit.
I like the...
Beautiful. Religious man.
I like the arts.
Man of the cloth.
I'm not a religious man, as you well know.
Let's call it right before we get into religion, I think. I think that would be...
Yeah, maybe that's another day.
Part two, maybe. Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time.
This was lovely. Got to hear some stories I didn't know. We got to dive a little bit deeper. To my listeners, as always, I love you so much. I was going to say vote for me for the podcast awards, but they're on like tomorrow. Actually, no. You know the podcast awards I said were ours? I think it's a scam.
Yeah.
So it was supposed to be on yesterday or 2 days ago, the Wednesday, pushed 2.5 months. So either they're not selling tickets, but there's no, the social media, there's no posts on it or anything like that. There's nothing about the fucking thing.
Who didn't write a business plan.
Exactly. So thank you for everyone that voted for me. Genuinely, that's fucking, just having my name up there is fucking insane. And I've gotten reached out to people just based off seeing the PayPod on that list. So that's fucking insane. I appreciate you. But we'll just keep it rolling, baby. Keep it rolling independent. That's what we like to do. We don't need anyone telling us how great we are. We already know. Keep it in. Is there anything else you'd like to leave people with?
No, I've really enjoyed it.
Good. Big fan of the podcast, aren't you?
Thank you.
Big fan of the podcast. No, you are. You're a big fan of the podcast.
Oh, statement.
Statement. It's all in the hips. Keep them moving, and I'll see you in the next one. Goodbye.
Goodbye.